All right, welcome everybody to the Configuration Persistency team call for August 28th, Friday. Today we're going, last time we ended talking about the Yang parser off of our issues and decisions list from Toyn and Tony, and that got us onto a discussion about Pyang. So Ted is also going to be talking, or has a presentation on Pyang, so we'll be doing that today. Are there any other agenda items we'd like to add to the list? So recently we discussed what we're doing in Honolulu. We had presented on Ala's requirements call. We had also presented on the architecture subcommittee. So if you missed those, you can go to these links and listen to the recordings. And we also had some discussion in the past few weeks about the modeling as well. So let's just dive right in then to the Yang parser and Pyang discussions. So last time, just to refresh people's memories, we were on the architecture and discussions list. Let me just put it here. And we had, we're kind of going down the list, and I think we landed on a discussion here on this existing Yang parser. And I guess these green issues are kind of closed, or we have agreements on, and probably need to tackle each of sort of these following issues, four or five issues.
That's right, yeah. And I expect we'll add more as we go along.
Yeah. Okay. So I think I remember Toyn sending out an email sort of searching for a Yang parser, and there's a rather full page here on the Yang parser. And last time we kind of went through this page. Toyn or Tony, did you want to say or land on anything specific in this page before we go to Ted's?
Yeah, we can. Now, last week when we started looking at it, and unfortunately, my broadband crashed when I was trying to present this at the same time as talking about it. I hadn't quite updated the conclusion yet. I had a quick draft there. So after the meeting, I just made sure, and there was some things outstanding on that page. But it's all been updated now. Just want to explain, it's mainly a developer's kind of page. Because the documentation wasn't,
I'm not sure, guys, but I cannot follow what
you're
saying.
Yeah, Tuan, you've broken up to the point where you're unintelligible, yes. I'm afraid.
You go to the very bottom there.
Tuan, I don't know if you can hear us, but you're pretty bad.
Yeah, something about the conclusion, something on the very bottom.
So that's basically where we are.
That's basically where we are
feeling at the moment.
Okay. Toyn, so we heard about 50% of what you said, unfortunately. So I think you're saying, well, let's just go over the conclusions really quick for your initial analysis.
Tuan, can you dial out and dial back in again? This is appalling.
Sorry. Yeah, something. Okay. Fortunately, we're kind of missing.
I don't know what I,
yeah, Tuan, we're completely unable to hear you.
Yeah.
Either dial in with the telephone or try dialing back in directly. But the connection that you have right now is not working. Okay.
Okay. All right. So I don't know if Tony, if you wanted to say some words about the Yang.
I don't have so much words to say about this, except I do have some words to say.
Can you hear me
about
now, okay?
Oh, yeah, yes. That's better, yeah. Or not. you were okay for a second there.
I'm back now. Is
there
this
you
better?
Go. Okay, yeah, that's
yes,
much better.
That's better. Yes.
Okay.
Okay, yeah, I closed Teams and other things, so try to minimize any bandwidth I'm using. Yeah, basically all I was saying that after, at last meet, week's meeting, I wasn't quite finished this page. And after the meeting, I made sure that the conclusions especially have been updated. So I've listed the pros and cons there. So that's basically my findings regarding this parser, what I found. So I can go quickly through them if you want. So the pros, well, the Young Tools parser that is being used in ONAP and ODL, which is the next statement really, is very complete. It's as far as I can see, any Young construct that we need is covered by this parser, and is able to basically convert it into Java objects, and we have a good API to work with these objects and query the model and do things with the model, all that kind of stuff. So it's mature code. Some of the sources go back to 2013. I think it came originally from Cisco.
These are already currently used in ONAP through other platform component projects.
Correct.
Is that right? Yeah. All right.
Correct. Yes. It's used in quite a few places. Now, it's not using all the functionality. It's used for parsing models. It's also used for generating code. I haven't looked in that so much for APIs. It can do that too. Yes, per point three there, it's very mature code. It's well developed, well tested. Many big companies have worked on it. I think it started at Cisco, but Red Hat and especially Pantheon have added an awful lot to it.
Is this because ONAP is an open source project? Do we need licenses to use these things, or are they?
No, it's not needed at all.
Okay.
Basically, this is supposed on ODL. And everything is open sourced.
I see. Okay.
I
presume it's been donated at some stage.
Yeah. With the first version of ODL.
Okay, because I think we have to be sensitive to that. There at the M3 checklist, there's
good point.
There's a point where you got to check if you have the appropriate licenses for things that aren't open source. Okay, go on.
Well, basically, this is the core of ODL, so it's open source.
Okay, good.
So basically, apart from, and I didn't really expect that, apart from parsing models, it also parses Young data based on those models. So the way it works from a code point of view, you parse a model, then you get what's called a schema context, I think, or something similar. And then you can say, using this schema context, can I parse this data? And then it will parse that data. And again, you get Java objects basically presenting that data with an API to examine and walk that tree. All that kind of stuff is included. I tested for parsing JSON data and XML data. Now, I only tried one way. I think it does both ways. So I parsed the files. So I went from files to objects. I think it's also possible to do the other way around. And some basic validation is included. Now, the validation is limited to single value, if you know what I mean. So it can check whether the type of a value is correct, any limitations like a regular expression, whether that it adheres to that, and it will throw in an exception, a pretty clear exception if it doesn't comply with the model. It's not as advanced that it can parse things where you need to check other data. So for instance, the unique keyword, if you want to check that a certain key is unique, it would have to compare it to other values. It's not able to do that. So it's only like point validation or whatever you want to call it, or things like when conditions, anything more advanced like that, that's not included. And that's basically what's going to be one of the main aspects of CPNS, or CNPS, to add that as additional validation, the more complicated validation. On the cons, it's not easy. It took me quite a while actually to get working with it. It's a large piece of software, and there's a lot of interfaces there, and combined with the documentation, the second point is not very good. Bit surprised about the documentation because it's an active project. People are still adding to it. But the documentation is very much out of date, at least the documentation I could find. There is a generated API docket, which is, of course, that's up to date, but the actual developer's guide, how to get started with it, is out of date. And that's one of the things I tried to address on this page. So this page tries to get over that. So I have some snippets of code in above all of this that will help people get started with using this parser in Java.
And I guess it's better than trying to do it from scratch.
Yeah, absolutely. The amount of, and it's obvious with the amount of code that's there. Like Yang is a complicated language. I wouldn't say complicated language, but there's quite a few things in there, and to parse that and validate that and to represent that, an awful lot of code was there to do all of that and to redo that. So, yeah, I think you're talking about a year's time to even get what we need to.
It's a new project.
Yes, it would be a new project.
Yeah, and I mean, you've covered everything here as far as I can see, because we need the Yang parser to do two things. We need to be able to parse the models that come from the CSIRs via SDC into Java objects that we can then relate to how we're going to persist the data. And the second is the parsing of documents that are compliant to those schemas. So data. So both of those are covered, and both of those give us a Java representation for the Java runtime. So from the Java runtime perspective, I think this meets the high level requirements that have been kind of identified in the high level description for the Java runtime.
Thank you, Ben. You're doing some good work there on those capturing those keywords.
Yeah, I'm taking the liberty to that's what I do. I'm an architect. So that's my skill. All right. Let's see.
You're a lot better with words than I am.
Let's see. Stu joined. Okay. All right, great. Thank you for that summary there. So let's move on to Ted. Do you have a presentation on PYANG? I can stop sharing if you do.
I can do a run through of a few things.
Yeah,
so let me. I think you have to give up.
Yep. Okay. Stop sharing.
Okay, so I'm going to talk about PYANG and a kind of a different way of doing these things. There's various advantages and disadvantages of different approaches. But let's start off with a Yang model. This is IETF routing. That's not it. IETF routing.yang. This is something I pulled down. It's fairly standard.
So for those who might be, so just a preamble, Chris Rapelsley Manzo from AT&T isn't able to attend the Friday meeting. So just for her benefit, maybe if you gave a few sentence overview of what PYANG is, and just to set the context of this whole thing in case we have new people listening also, and Neve is new, et cetera.
PYANG is an open source project. It's written in Python, but it's often just used as a command line. It's a very standard way of working with Yang. It's very well supported. Here's the Git page for it. And here is a man page. So it's this is also a fairly standard way of working with Yang.
So essentially, in a nutshell, it's a tool or a program to convert Yang into other things, Java, or it says Yin modules it there.
Do a variety of transformations. Let's come down here. It's also a Yang. It's also a Yang validator. It's very often used to make certain that your Yang documentation is properly written. There's a variety of output formats. It can apparently also generate code. It has, I haven't actually used most of these things, JS Tree, some JavaScript navigator. I'm going to concentrate, look at the tree output and the XML output, the Yin output. Yin is the XML version of Yang. So it's a fairly, it's a pretty full-featured tool for working with Yang.
So when it takes from a Yang model and converts it into a Ying module, how is that then converted to say, for example, like a Java objects or?
I haven't actually used any of those things.
Okay.
Yeah. I mostly work with the textual representation. So
so it's also a visualizer.
My concern basically is that a runtime is not that useful. It's a really powerful tool, really good, but it's more Python oriented and it's not really for runtime, I will say. So I'm not pretty sure who could fit this in our POC. That's more my point. How do you see it?
I actually see it the same, Claudio, but I really am interested in seeing.
Yeah, let's let Ted go through the.
I'd like to see what.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's see how it fits.
I just wanted to set this context. Sorry, Tony. I just wanted to set sort of the context for people who are new about what the thing is. That's all. So.
Yeah. So. Yeah. So you can transform the Yang different formats. Yin is the XML format. So this is the Yang model written in Yang, and this is the equivalent version written in XML. The advantage of having it in XML is that you can readily ingest it into into any kind of a analytics program so that you can work with the model. It's also possible to get a so-called tree output, which gives a description of, which gives a description of what's going on in the actual tree. So it's actually it's processing all of the it's doing all the complicated things, which is processing all the weird grouping slash imports inheritance processing.
Right, and it's really good because if you have multiple files, it will open it and create a tree and collect all the information from all the files. That's really really good, right?
Yeah, so let me show you some of the things I've done with it. I do want to point now, I mostly work with this XML format. I actually convert it to JSON because my preferred tool is Python, and Python works very, very well with JSON, but that's a detail. I do want to point out that since you can get this kind of a textual representation of what's going on in your tree structured data, it becomes a lot easier to calculate what are the differences between two models. So you essentially write a diff program between the previous version and the current version.
And you can get
understand. And I suppose my concern is if you render everything directly into Java, you lose that. I also have the textual version in a file here. Now, what I do with this is I actually convert it into a table. And I have this kind of a table. This is in JSON. And this describes all the different parts and pieces that are in this Yang model. This again has all the inheritance processing working. I can capture some of the things related to what the various field constraints are. It's relatively easy to capture and work with field constraints. The more difficult thing is working with the XPath constraints and things like choice and one of and various things like that. But so this. I can render this into a table, an equivalent view of this table. I have it here, maybe it's here. It's kind of like this. So this is a, there's only four things in a fully rendered Yang model. You have containers, you have lists, which are basically repeated containers. You have leaves, which are fields within various nodes. And you have leaf lists, which are repeated fields within various leaves and within various containers and lists. So, for example, interface is of a list type, as you can see here. So it's possible.
Wait, how did
to,
you tell that was a type of thing?
The square brackets at the end are indicating that it was a list of text objects.
Oh, I see. Got it.
Okay. Yeah, this is just a visualization I have. It's another way of showing this. Of course, Yang will produce a variety of visualization formats.
And do you but actually use this to generate a schema in a database, or?
I do generate a schema for a database. I will show that in a minute. But the essential skeletonized structure of what's happening in this particular Yang model, which you get by basically, this is the root.
So are those things at the end, are they called leaves or leaflets or whatever?
No. So this is a skeletonized structure. This, you have the root. This is the root of the root of the Yang document. And it contains, so anytime you receive a document, it's rooted, and this is the document. But every time that you have any kind of a list, that's some sort of a repetition, right? So that means that you need another table, or you need another. I'm organizing these in a particular structure. This is very similar to the way that the original POC was done. So that's why you're going to be seeing the way I'm rendering this. But there's, of course, a million ways to render this. However, there is a certain repetition, because you can have more than one rib under ribs, so you have to build this thing as a separate table, or equivalently, something equivalent to a separate table. Similarly with control plane, similarly with this different kind of a rib, and similarly with this different kind of control plane. This particular rib has sublists, including route and next hop. So this is the skeletonized structure of this Yang document, and that's kind of reflected here. So under routing state ribs, rib route has a number of fields that we can extract, and some of these are actually in what would be subcontainers from the this particular route list node, but. See, it doesn't really matter, because you can always just kind of bring them up into this parent. And you know, as long as there's no repetition, you can just kind of store them all together. Or if you're rendering it fairly directly into SQL, you can just say it that way and just create a single table with all the fields which are not repeated, repeated in that manner. which are not contained in list nodes, and that's what this is doing here. There's many ways to render this, and I want to address this a little bit later. But again, this was this particular rendering was trying to match what was done in the original POC. If I have the so this is an equivalent SQL representation of all these different tables, and you have So for example, one of the particular rib tables, routing ribs rib, is a child of the root, and we have this parent-child relationship expressed with foreign keys and primary keys. There's many different ways to render this, but this, again, is very similar to the way that the original POC was done, and that's what I was trying to mirror. So what this particular table represents is it gives you a recipe for converting from a particular instance. Here it is. This is a small, simple instance of the of this Yang document. It gives you a way to convert from this sort of a document. Again, it's written in JSON. This is the way the original POC was done. I was trying to mirror it. It gives you a way to go from this document into a set of instructions for inserting into this table. And equivalently, if you're trying to query this table, it gives you a set of instructions for creating a document which looks like this. Now, the advantage here is you're not generating code. There's one program which can render, store and can extract every document. All you need is this kind of a table, and this kind of a table, another representation of it, is something like this. And I want to get back to why this is good in just a minute, but I want to show that in fact I can take, because I have this set of instructions expressed in this table, I can take this document in ins1.json and convert it into a set of insert statements to update the database. So let me express why I think this table-driven approach is a good idea. And this kind of mirrors some things that have been said about why perhaps creating such a tightly coupled database structure, which will mirror the Yang document, is not such a good idea. And the thing is, you have to come up with lots and lots of these. You have to come up with a different, to criticize this particular approach of having a tight mapping between the Yang document and its storage structure, you have to create one of these for every possible document. Now, I tend to be a database person. I tend to think that this can be managed, but it is an issue, and it's one that needs to be addressed. Because if you're managing 10,000 different kinds of Yang documents, you're going to have 10,000 different schemas in your database, one for each possible Yang document. However, the advantage is this is a problem with this sort of an approach, but there's different kinds of renderings. Now, one thing that you'll see is there's a lot of redirection within this mapping document. So I happen to know that there is a particular table which represents this particular node, which is a list node within the document, and has these fields. Each field has a particular name. It might have a particular path, subpath within that list node. But there is a mapping between this name, the combination of the path and the field name, to some SQL name. How are you actually going to access this somewhere? And that's the critical piece of information. Because if you update your Yang document, you don't have to create a whole new version. You can relate the two, if you can relate these two versions by taking diffs. For example, you can take a diff on this sort of a document and see what's new and what's different. This can also be done by when you're processing augments. You can see what is the difference between these two models. How do they relate and how are they different? And you can adjust this mapping table. And that's the way that you can gracefully handle schema change. Now, I in working with various not known app but ecomp components, I know that it's often important to be able to render the same document, the same model, in multiple versions simultaneously. And this is the path for rendering these multiple versions simultaneously. So to finish, and this is why another reason why I think this very table-driven approach is the better path. So there, you can criticize the way I'm laying out this SQL, and this is just one rendering, by the way. You can criticize it because you have to have a different schema. You would put this in the IETF interfaces or whatever it is, schema, and then you have your own little database within that schema. Most SQL databases have a way to manage this, but it can get really quite unwieldy. It only takes milliseconds to insert this, but ingesting a new document does become an issue. But the thing is, if you're generating Java code for every possible document, you run into the exact same issue. This exact same keeping track of thousands of different little pieces of code, trying to keep track of the namespaces and so on and so forth. So if you are planning to process one or two Yang models, and you are trying to work with them, then yes, you want a you want a programmatic interface like a like a Java interface. But if you're trying to process a very wide variety of Yank documents, then I think that code generation is going to turn out to be a mess. You're also burying the structure of the Yank document inside the Java code instead of exposing it in, say, a JSON document or some sort of a textual document where it is much more possible to tell what are the differences between different models, between different versions of the models, between the augmented models, and there's various other ways of saying this particular model doesn't completely conform to the standard model. So that's the that's the pitch I'm giving, which is that it is possible to process these things, and it is possible to generate a fairly generic program which will handle pretty much any Yank document, but will still leave all the critical information visible for analytics. And especially version management analytics, and so that's pretty much it.
Do you think this could be used to complement other tools? I mean, the visualizer seems great. The like the ability to sort of you showed like almost three different kind of ways to visualize the data, which I think is very intuitive in many ways.
Yeah, I was thinking the same. The visualization aspect of it I really like, and it's definitely like you say complementary.
And from a debugging perspective, the ability to follow and understand at every stage what is happening, and the fact that there is a strong resemblance between the input Yang document, the input Yang model, and the resulting SQL tables, relational tables, is very appealing.
Being essentially
a database person, the thing that I like about this particular rendering, there are issues, but the thing I like about this rendering is that it opens up to generic queries. So among all documents within within every possible document that's ever been stored for the IETF routing, I can ask what all the possible address families are, what are the names are, and perform other kinds of exploration queries, which are, from my point of view, tend to be pretty critical. It's possible to do this if you're rendering these things back to Yang documents, but it's just that one step more complicated.
Ted, can you tell me that the window on the very left that starts with tables, where does that come from? Is there some hand editing in that, or is that entirely generated by PyYang from the input?
No. So what happens is I take this this document, then I convert it into JSON because it's easier for Python to work with JSON.
Yep.
And then I have a set of tools which produce this.
Okay, so some of that where you have a field name outgoing interface, and you had some where you talked about there was some nesting or references to other tables that was kind of hit, root slash next hop in the path, for example, where you had some nesting going on. That's coming from your other tools.
From my analysis, but you can also kind of see it here. When you see this rib star or this interface, the interface star just means it's a list value. This means it's a leaf list. Whatever here, this means it's a list type. And similarly, route is within it is a list type. And you can kind of see I'm not using this kind of an input. This is the tree output from the Yang model. I'm not using that because I want to be a little bit fancier. But that kind of you can kind of see the connection between that and something like this. And it's basically expressing the, if you're to render this more directly into SQL, this is the way that you would break it down because it's just a tree. All these other things within the actual Yang document if I can find it somewhere. Yeah, within the actual Yang document, there's all these, you know, containers and subcontainers and stuff like that. That's useful for hierarchical descriptions, and but it's not an essential part of the way the data is described. If you don't have repetition, you can bring everything up and put it in a single node.
You can flatten this, yeah.
Yeah, which is what that, well, I've lost it, but that's what the...
It's over on the left still.
Now, by the way, that's only one possible representation. If you have an augment, you might want to, instead of building a whole new table, let me see if I can't get it here. Instead of building a whole new set of tables, you can, for that one particular augmented version, you can augment these tables. And in particular, Python is a very, very flexible language. You can actually create inheritance relationships among particular tables. So if you have augmented the this particular rib table in specifically routing ribs rib to augment it with some additional fields, you can create a child table of rib which has those additional fields. And this is something which is readily expressed within Postgres. It can also be expressed in MySQL, but it takes a little bit more effort and it's harder to read.
Okay.
Seems like also that what Toyn was saying was that one of the weaknesses of the current Yang parsers is the documentation was a weakness, and it seems like this could be used to complement or fill that hole. Maybe from what I saw, the one of those windows showed this what looked kind of like a good.
Yeah, no, sorry, Ben. It's really the actual documentation of that library that's.
Oh, I see. Okay. All right. But I assume we're also going to have to do something similar as well to sort of document, you know, we've got a Yang model, like what does it all look like somewhere?
Yeah.
And I don't know, I'm just thinking about it also, maybe to take advantage of both, if maybe the having, they say, a dedicated service for Yang management that could leverage the tool, the different output from PYang, and this one could be a dedicated services, and the other part of the application can use these services, and also taking advantage of the visualization for PYang. And I don't know if the output format, the XML1, also can be an output from the services, and then from this XML also maybe generating the Java component could be feasible then also from the XML. I don't know. Mm-hmm. And also, I don't. One part also, I can see it can help. It maybe on top of visualization. I don't know. Also, what about the validation? Because it seems that maybe from what you say, PYang is a quite standard validation tool also. And maybe
look at it. What's primarily used for is to validate the models themselves. It's not clear to me that it will validate instances.
Not the intent or the data. Okay, more the.
However, I do have to say that the hard part of validation actually relates to the various XPath kinds of constraints that you can have. If you're doing
the wins and the choices, that's absolutely right.
Yeah, it seems similar to the limitation of the Java Yang parser that you only get basic validation of the types and the values.
Yeah. So one of the reasons I have. Mm-hmm. Over here, and I'm doing this fairly complex analysis of the XML is to be able to capture things like comments and constraints. So I'm not capturing the enum constraints apparently, but it's possible to capture. I'm not capturing the comments either, but it is possible to capture all of these things and create a in SQL statements. It's actually possible to insert comments. So you can have field comments and table comments. And you can make this thing a little bit more self-documenting. Of course, I would not. This is one possible way of representing these Yang documents using SQL. It does have the disadvantage that you need one or a family of tables for every different Yang document, every different Yang model you want to store, which is a distinct disadvantage.
I mean, it's different to what I have been proposing. What I've been proposing is to create the schema not at the level of the Yang models, but at the level of the Yang language. So to fix the schema to the version of the Yang language, and then not so much to generate code, that was never the intention, but to store artifacts that relate to specific Yang models that we care to store. So they would encapsulate the rules around things like the validation, the constraints, and to store those so they can be read when the data is being queried. Now, clear disadvantage of that approach is you cannot directly, and some people would see that as an advantage, you cannot directly go to the database and make any sense of it because you won't understand how in any way, shape, or form relates to the original Yang model or Yang data. But as I said, some people would see that as an advantage. You must always come through the CNPS interface in order to query that data. But that adds a level of processing that you wouldn't have, because you can, once you've stored the data in the database, you can copy that, you can bring it off somewhere else, and then you can do analytics of it. You don't need to worry about bringing the CNPS with you in order to access the data again. So, I mean, there's definite trade-offs here.
Number of trade-offs, and I think I've made this comment before. I tend to come at this from a very database point of view. I've done a lot of work in data quality and data auditing. Being able to audit the database itself is a big advantage to me. However, and it's kind of better if you don't have to render it to a Yang document, to a Yang instance, in order to do the auditing. However, it's still possible. It's not as though you can't.
You would have to understand how the data was stored against a simpler Yang language schema rather than a Yang model schema.
It's sort of like the advantage of this is that it's kind of easy to see what the document is supposed to look like. The disadvantage is you have to customize your SQL to the document. It makes auditing and especially data quality auditing easier, but if you're breaking up the data in a completely different manner, it's not as though it's impossible. It's just one step less convenient.
Yeah, it's one step less convenient, but that's part of the trade-off. And then, of course, there's other trade-offs too. But this has been an excellent presentation. I'm enjoying it. I don't think we're finished yet, but
I
have to internalize this.
The thing that I really want to get across is, regardless of exactly what's happening, I do recommend that you do try to think about version management. I've seen projects really get bogged down in this, where you can't assume that if something gets that if a model gets updated, that every controller is going to update to the new model version simultaneously.
Correct.
Speaking, you have to be able to serve same in multiple versions simultaneously.
Correct.
You have to read both ingest from model one and model two, and spit it out in model one or model two, regardless of the model version that it came in on.
Within reason, as long as they are somewhat compatible, yes.
Yeah, there's it's actually in the relational world, it's actually possible to some degree. If you have structures like this, it's still possible for a lot of things. Obviously, if you're moving, and I saw this, if you're moving something from from slash to routing ribs rib, that changes the meaning of the data element. But it's I think what I'm trying to argue about is If you want to think about doing versioning, you have to keep some kind of a table, which say looks like this, or where did that thing go to, or looks like this, so that it's possible to say what are, in a principled manner, to say what are the differences. I mean, this is a little bit hard to parse, but it's not impossible to parse. And because it's parsable, I can take differences. I mean, if I can take differences, I can say what is the change from, say, doing an augment. And I can understand what that change is. Or, and especially if I'm doing versioning, I can understand what are the differences between version 1 and version 2. And then
whether, whether I care about those. And I can then tailor my filters or my queries to avoid pulling up information that I don't care about that would break subsequent things, for example.
Yeah, but I think the a big thing, and this is difficult, so that's why I'm going to, no matter exactly what the output is, you want to keep what the decisions are. You want to keep some table like this or like this so that you can tell what the differences are so that you at least have some handle in being able to serve the same model in multiple different versions simultaneously.
Yeah, I see. I think I see where you're coming from. I'm definitely going to come back on this recording because there's a huge amount of information in this TED that I want to ingest. I mean, you haven't convinced me yet that the approach that we're taking with the language level schema is wrong.
So I don't want to say that it's wrong. It's not the approach I would take, but you do a lot of things which are not perhaps the best.
Same as that. None of us are perfect.
I consider both are compatible.
Yeah, yes.
More
it feels like
a util tool
that
will take advantage for the design phase, right. Modeling, fixing, collecting information from the modeling
this
level.
This is much easier. Doing this, using this
right.
approach is much easier, yeah.
When right. you're designing the model, right. But okay. The time of processing, then it's up to the language we're going to be using.
Because yeah, so
right.
A certain approach which I like, which is expressed by this IETFinterfaces.sql document, that's just what I like. What I think is critical is to have one of these two documents here, perhaps both of them, which textually lay out what that mapping is. So you have a way of analyzing differences between different versions of models and yep. what's the difference in an augmented model versus the default model.
And I don't see these things as mutually exclusive at
all.
Exactly.
Right.
I think we should be able to have a streamlined, automated, highly performant persistence store, as well as being able to document and allow people to query the differences between models and see the difference between models in a format like this. And I don't see those two as being mutually exclusive in any way, shape, or form.
So that's basically the big point I have, and that's why I really want to talk about PNG. I have an approach that I like. Other people like different approaches, but I think the critical thing is again, having a handle on schema on version management.
And I sorry, just one thing I want to get back to. I think there was a slight misunderstanding, and maybe I didn't present it very clearly. The Java Young Parser can be used to generate code for APIs and that kind of stuff, and it's actually widely used for that. But that's not the kind of usage that we were envisaging. So when we're parsing a model, it's actually not generating code normally. It's representing the model as Java objects.
Generating deploy your models. Basically.
Yeah. Yeah, and they could actually, again, be exported as JSON format as well. That wouldn't be an issue either. Maybe not as flat as the kind of ones you're having. It would probably be a bit more cumbersome, and there's probably a bit of extra information there that's specific to the young parser itself. So that would not be probably not be the best idea to use that. But in general, it's just generating things in memory, basically, and holding things in memory. It's not generating code on the fly or anything like that. It parses a model and then has an object representation in memory of that model with all the required validation and everything like that. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to clarify that.
Okay, any other questions for Ted or thoughts? Great, Ted. Thank you so much for this overview. I think we'll have to go back and take a look at this rich information here. So,
I'm glad you recorded that.
Yeah. I think that my feeling also is that these things seem like they're compatible. We can find make use of both both things. And certainly the at least seeing the demo of the visualization capabilities, I think, of Ping is really, really nice.
And also from, as Ted was saying, the analytics and being able to analyze the data for use cases that we haven't thought of yet.
Stuff. Yeah.
Right. That's powerful. And sure. I can see, I mean, I'm not entirely sure how it stacks up against some of the other use cases, which are primarily about data access. So lots of food for thought here.
Right.
I mean, it's a use case that I wasn't considering as a primary use case for the CMPS. So it's good to get that perspective from a data analyst.
I've gotten involved in a lot of projects which really ran into trouble because it was hard to see what was actually in that database.
Yeah, and what we're proposing is going to make it difficult to see what's in the database without having a CMPS instance to actually read that data, because it will all be not deliberately obfuscated, but obfuscated by the very schema that we're choosing, which is a very, very simple schema, which will not need to be updated or new tables added as a result of having to add new Yang models. So I do see what you're saying. And I want to think about it some more and internalize it and see how we can best use what you're saying and support those analytics type use cases to make it easier for maintenance, debugging, and understanding analytics, what's going on.
So an aside thing here, I just thought of, so there is actually, I don't know if people are aware, but there's this OENS, Open Network Edge Summit, conference happening at the end of September. And then that also simultaneously, there's a PlugFest happening for the ORAN ONAP PlugFest. And then 2 weeks after that is the virtual DDF. So I'm wondering, maybe do we want to demo something for CMPS, or maybe have, I don't know if there's anything demoable we'll have, but that might be something that might be interesting to think about. I think that's happening, it looks like Friday, October 2. I don't know what people think about that.
It's kind of tempting to say we'll have something demoable, but on the other hand, we're only just starting. So
yeah,
it's
right.
Kind of tricky to commit to something now.
But sure.
I definitely would keep in the back of my mind, and I would hope we have something demoable at that stage. Yeah. But I wouldn't
What's
like
the
to
drop dead date?
So there's these PlugFests. So there was one last year, and then a year on, there's this one. I think they were meant to be kind of twice a year rather than once a year, but COVID kind of threw a wrench in the works. So I think, or a spanner in the works, as you guys might say. But so. I think the many of the proposals I think were already submitted, but I think you could still get in if you wanted to. Also, we're due to have a discussion about that topic with the coordinator, Tracy Van Breckel, next Wednesday. So if you want to attend the use case realization call, you can attend that. If we don't have anything demo, well, that's fine. But it does get people, you know, it puts a seed in people's minds that this is a big project going on, that it's important.
It would be nice.
And that, and having given, so the last year's one, I was involved with the plug and play demo because I kind of led that use case in ONAP. And so I put together an overview presentation. It's just like a two slider. But it gives people a sense of that project just as an overview. Even if the demo is super simple, you do get a chance for a few minutes to have that overview of what it is. So and trying to become a project in Honolulu, I think the more this project gets visibility in people's heads, the better. So that's something to think about. and okay. We have a couple minutes left. Do we want to just queue up and see what our next week's topics might be? Let me see. So Twine or Tony, I guess you can update this. Do we have a kind of a conclusion here? Do we?
I mean, they're complementary, but I don't think we have a conclusion unless we actually put a little bit more text in.
Sure.
I mean, there's a big decision coming down the line, and I mean, this is the thing that we're trying to prove. Mm-hmm. And from the model-driven perspective, the actual schema, the underlying schema, is going to be very important. So that's part of what we're going to prove. So I don't want to put it in as a decision.
Yeah.
But one of the outcomes of the proof of concept will be the fitness for purpose of an underlying schema and an approach. I mean, that's what we're trying to prove, that this model-driven approach works.
Sure.
But what we have are potential alternatives, or alternatives that provide different levels of abstraction, different levels of visibility to the underlying data in the database.
Tony, is that actually decision number 7 there, just above it, that where that falls under?
Number 7, no. No, this is more fundamental. It's more of an outcome of the proof of concept. I mean, the approach that we're taking was, and I've presented it at the DDF and also the architecture. So I'd like to proceed with that.
Yeah.
But this is a variation of it. So it's a slightly different approach that's looking for the same ends. And I don't think they're mutually exclusive either, because that's one extreme. You could take it and say, this is another way to do it. But from a schema perspective, they are quite different from how we store the data, how we actually serialize that data to disk. They are quite different.
Yep.
And from that perspective, they are alternatives, and they're competing alternatives. But I don't know which one is better. There's going to be trade-offs there. That's one of the reasons why I need to internalize it. But from the perspective of analytics, what Ted has presented today is clearly superior, because you don't need to bring a big ball of code with you to interpret what's been stored in the database.
Yeah.
So,
it's very hard to visualize just a bunch of Java objects, really.
Yeah, but it's not even that. I mean, you could visualize the tables, but you wouldn't make any sense of them, because the structure would be hidden in artifacts that are required, that are generated from the AND models.
Visualization of the tree.
Yes.
Yeah.
Gives you the clear vision of everything.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. And that makes life much easier to debug and understand and do analytics of. So that's quite a powerful argument.
Thanks, Bruno.
So, I think we'll have to come back to this.
We are at time. So, do we want to pick one of these topics for next week to queue up?
Well, we can begin to look at the transactionality behavior. I think that one's about ready to go to at least discuss. I mean, it was kind of ready before I went on holidays, and it hasn't moved on since.
Sure.
Okay, so I'd like to open the discussion. I don't have a decision on it.
Sure. Okay. All right, great. So we'll call the meeting here. Thank you, everybody, for joining. Thanks again, Ted and Twine, for your presentations and leading the discussions. All right, great. Have a great weekend and stay safe. All right.
Okay.
Perfect. Thank you, everyone.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Ted.
Bye-bye.
Bye.